Everyone, welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. This is Jason Fitzgerald from Over the Cap, and it's April 13th, 2020, and I thought we'd throw together a quick little podcast here just because there was breaking news about the Christian McCaffrey contract. So I think pretty much just talk about running backs a little bit today, maybe a couple things on the CBA, but probably not too much there other than just some stuff that maybe ties into this a little bit. Where some people asked me some thoughts on that. Got a lot of really good feedback on the Rams podcast that I did last week, so thanks for that. Not sure exactly what the next team will be. I got a lot of requests for the Jets. I don't really have a good feel for the Jets. I have a good feel for their roster. Don't really have a great feel necessarily for what they're doing because we've only got a couple months, really, of Joe Douglas doing stuff. You know, you can look at last August and a couple of moves that probably didn't turn out too well and then what they did this offseason. So it's a little bit hard to do there, but maybe I'll do a Jets one this week just to throw that in there. And then had a couple other suggestions. I think the Chiefs were one of the teams that got mentioned a couple times. The Texans got mentioned a handful of times. I probably asked Troy to see if I can figure out how to get him on here to go over the Texans. That's probably a little bit better than me doing that. And I request as well for the San Francisco 49ers. We'll touch maybe on a couple of those teams. But the big news today was Christian McCaffrey. You know, and I thought this was kind of timely after talking about Gurley so much last week, where we're talking about the Rams and just some of the decisions that they've made that have been kind of negative. We talked about McCaffrey a little bit before, briefly on the revamped podcast maybe 2 weeks ago, a little bit, but certainly in articles and definitely a lot of times where I'll mention some stuff on Twitter. And I think the biggest thing that I wasn't sure of with McCaffrey, and I know I did a radio spot in Carolina where I even mentioned about this, and the question that I had is, you know, where are they coming from? You know, they purged a lot of their roster, but obviously McCaffrey's a very popular player. He's younger, you know, he's very impactful, if you want to call it, from a fantasy perspective. You know, certainly on the field, there's something to be said for the value that you really get from running backs versus what certain running backs are going to get paid. But, you know, he's going to put up volume statistics the same way that Todd Gurley did. But the question that I had was Carolina, with all this talk that they're going to be this new analytics organization, they're really reevaluating everything, and they're going to take a different approach, you know, to where they're going to take in all this information and they're going to use that information to make better decisions in the future. And this, to me, says, no, they're not doing that. They're not going to do anything that's out of the ordinary unless this is just the one short-term move that they're going to make to keep everyone happy. You know, where we talked about that part where you want to keep everyone happy, you want to keep everyone in that locker room happy. And, you know, from the perspective maybe of some of the players in Carolina, what did you see this offseason? You saw Cam Newton get cut. You saw Luke Kuechly retire. You saw Greg Olsen get cut. You saw Bradberry leave in free agency. You saw some other players leave in free agency. They weren't very active in probably retaining some of their own guys. You know, they did re-sign Lawson. I think it was when did they? They re-signed him back in December. I think I said Lawson there. I meant Thompson. So, you know, not a lot of activity that would be recent. So you've got a new coach coming in, and this is probably your most popular player. So there's the non-football aspect of it. And the justifications for this contract really are two things. The two ways to justify it are, one, you're doing good by a player who's been somewhat important to your organization for the last 2 years. If you want to say last three, you can say last three, but it's really been the last two seasons. Has been exciting enough, has been the one part of the equation on the Panthers that have made them somewhat relevant, right? Why do the Panthers get highlights every now and then? Usually it's Christian McCaffrey. Why do people pay attention to them? Probably because they're playing fantasy football and Christian McCaffrey is on their team, or he's on their DFS team, or whatever it is. He's a big part of that equation. So I think the popularity aspect rolls into it. And the other thing is, sometimes you're paying guys for past performance. And kind of looked at that a little bit with Gurley, and you say, well, you know, running backs are a little bit underpaid and everything else. I don't know if that holds as much water where we're talking about the first-round draft picks at running back. I mean, I guess it does if we're talking about contracts that are $16 million a year. if that's our baseline. But, you know, Christian McCaffrey's rookie contract, how much was that one worth? You know, $4.3 million a year, which is not bad in the grand scheme of things. If you looked at where running backs were a couple of years ago, that would actually be pretty high, you know, the borderline top 10, I would say. That's obviously changed in the last couple of years. So, you know, maybe you're doing a solid by him. So as you look through this, you kind of wonder to yourself, why is another team, though, really making this mistake? You know, are they going to curse themselves for this the way the Rams probably did Gurley, the way the Jets have done Bell, the way the Cardinals clearly did David Johnson, the way the Falcons did Devonta Freeman, the way just about everybody does? You know, we went through all those names last week. We can go through them again and again and again. And the answer to that really is that there is no logical reason for it. There's no logical football reason to go in at $16 million a year for running back. Is there a reason to do it now versus waiting? Yes, that there is. Okay, so McCaffrey was going to make $2.8 million this year. I forget what his tag is going to be next year. You know, they picked up, I think they already picked up the option on him. I just don't have the numbers on that, but let's call it 12. Let's just say it's around 10 or 12 million. You know, it's transition tag. You know, it's probably around 9. So let's call it 8 or 9 million. You know, and so you're talking about $12 million that they had over the next 2 years. He had a couple bucks in proration from the last deal, so 14.5 in existing cap charges. So the Panthers are probably going to look at this and they're going to say, okay, look, we want to do this deal with him. We can fold over this $13 million in existing money that we already owe him. We're not cutting him this year. We're not trading him. We're not cutting him. We already know we're not cutting him next year. We're going to pick up that option. It's injury guaranteed. We're not going to cut him for skill. No matter how bad things go, it would look heartless on the organization to do that. We're not going to do that. So effectively, he already has $13 million guaranteed. So whatever our guarantee package is going to be here, let's just roll that $13 million into it. It makes it a little easier for us longer term. Gives us more flexibility with how we structure the deal and the way we work with the cap numbers here. Because, again, we're looking at 2020. He already has an existing cap number of $5.5 million, and then next year he would have had around $9 million. So they're able to kind of maneuver the cap hits a little bit better, a little bit more efficiently, and probably be able to walk away after two new seasons. So that means 22, 23, he's on the team. 24 is where maybe, if you structure it properly, you look at moving away. But just in terms of football logic, I mean, there just is none. You just look at the numbers. What is his value really based on? McCaffrey's value is based on the fact that he carries the ball 300 times a year and he's targeted 130 times a year. It's an insane workload. All right, it's basically what David Johnson probably had in that one season in Arizona. It's a crazy workload. Do you go back in time and do you want to look at someone like a Marshall Faulk and say it's like his workload? Maybe Priest Holmes had a season even like that in there before he broke down. You know, you can go back and you can find some older players who had seasons and stuff like that. Most of them broke down. McCaffrey's a little bit younger, but for the most part, they break down. If you are going to be a better offense, and Carolina's been a terrible offense for at least two seasons, you know, Newton has been banged up pretty much for 2 years, I would say now. So they really haven't had much going on at quarterback. I mean, let's see, the last year was Allen, I think, was their quarterback most of last year. Let me just pull up who their players were. Let me just make sure I get the names right. And we've got, it was Allen. Allen played, how many did he start? Yeah, he started 13, Cam started the 2, and I forgot about Will Greer. He had the 2 as well. So he was basically covering for what would be considered a completely inept quarterback situation. The year before, you basically had Cam Newton starting just about the entire season, and Newton was pretty poor. You know, his arm looked like it wasn't there. Didn't look like he had the strength, the same abilities last season. So again, it's more like he's someone that you're relying on because the other part of your team just isn't working. And the part of the team that really drives success, for the most part, is going to be that passing game. Now, you might say, hey, well, he's a 1,000-yard receiver. He's not a 1,000-yard receiver if you're looking at efficiency yards. A pass to a wide receiver is generally efficient. A pass to a running back is closer in line with a running play. Is it probably better than a running play? Sure, it's going to be better than a running play. But for the most part, it's the third option that you really want to get to, all right? Passing to a wide receiver is likely going to be a first down plus a good amount of additional yardage on majority of plays if the completion is made. You've probably got a yards per target on that of, probably around 9, I would say. McCaffrey is pretty much ridiculous at, 6'5". There's a big gap between what an actual receiver is going to produce on the type of his routes that he runs versus what somebody like McCaffrey is going to run. I'll pick on someone, for example, like a Jamison Crowder, who's $9.5 million a year. What is Crowder average last year? 9.5 or so? Let's just compare our traditional slot receiver, who makes $9.5 million a year, which is Crowder. Let's just pull up the numbers just to give a little perspective on how you're kind of getting those 1,000 yards out of the running back position. So Crowder, 833 yards, averages 10.7. I would have thought it would have been less than that, watching so many plays that were thrown basically at the line of scrimmage. 10.7 yards per reception, and 830. Let me see what his yards per target is. 6.8 yards per target. McCaffrey last year had pretty much the craziest year that you could possibly have. So he was at 8.7 yards per reception, and he is at, 142 targets. So he was about 7. All right, so let's say he's about equivalent to Jamison Crowder. Let's say he's about that. Why is one worth 9.5 and the other one's worth 16? Because of the running back ability? I mean, there shouldn't be that kind of a gap. Look, if your running back is a 1,000-yard receiver, it means that there's probably some inefficiency within your offense. Because if you've just signed Teddy Bridgewater to play for you for $23 million a year, and you've signed Robbie Anderson to stretch the field at $10 million a year, and you've got your younger guys on the outside who you were expecting big things from, McCaffrey's role, if the goal is team success, and that seems to be what you're building, McCaffrey's role should actually fall. McCaffrey's role should not increase as time goes on. His role should decrease as the team becomes more competitive. You don't want him to be carrying the ball 300 times a year, 18, 19 times a game. You probably want him under 15. All right. Now, I'm not saying 15 touches, just under probably 15 carries. Where do you ideally want his yardage to be in the passing game? You probably want him at, I would think, under 100 targets. You certainly don't want him at 150, because that means you don't have other people to throw the ball to, right? So just from that standpoint, it's like you're sinking a bunch of money into probably the least efficient group of plays that's possible. And it's on a position where the efficiency that you see now generally doesn't last. So it's almost like a lose-lose for a team when this is the type of decision-making that they have. And again, there's other reasons for it. But from an on-field perspective, he would have to really buck the odds to, make this work. He would have to. from a numbers standpoint, from a financial standpoint, this is a big deal. Now, we don't have any of the numbers yet. We don't have any kind of breakdown. Maybe we'll get them in a couple days. Who knows? So we don't have that. The only thing we know is $64 million 4 years. That's a monster number. All right? So why do I say that that's a monster number? Because let's just break those down. Let me just pull up a couple deals here. So here is where we have Todd Gurley at 4 years, made $57.5 million had he completed the contract. Obviously, that didn't happen. And then the other comparable that we're going to have is Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott will earn $58 million over 4 years. Now, granted, in the $64 million, sometimes there's a lot of incentives. So we don't know that. It might be a maximum value based on him being the NFL MVP, the Super Bowl MVP, the Panthers making the Super Bowl. If we work from the assumption that none of those are in there, this is a huge increase because it's gone from a market that's $58 million to $64 million, because you want to compare the same time frames on these deals. So that's a big jump. So even though the annual value, you know, is basically about a 7% increase, our increase in actual value, let's get the numbers right on this one. Whoops. 64, 58. It's probably about a 10% increase. So that's a really good job by his agents to focus on the annual value of the deal versus kind of the actual breakdown into cash components if the $64 million is real. So it's a significant jump from where Elliott was. A real big jump, actually. And again, it's a good job by them, I think, to bank home this argument, which in his case, I think, has to do with the receiving to a large extent as to why he's more viable than some of the others. And there is some truth to that. His ability as a receiver should hold up a little bit longer. But it's strange that for running backs, and I don't know if this goes to fantasy football or what the thing is, you know, with the fantasy, you get a lot more media attention than if you're a non-fantasy relevant player or less fantasy relevant player. Because tight ends who have been 1,000 plus yard receivers have had a really, really difficult time of breaking through to that next level. Remember Jimmy Graham years ago, he tried to have the basically that grievance heard that he wanted to be filed as a wide receiver. And that was his goal. You know, he was tagged as a tight end. He wanted to be tagged as a wide receiver. He wanted to be paid as a wide receiver. And nobody bought it. Nobody bought into that logic at all. The Saints didn't. The league didn't. And ultimately, he didn't, because the contract that he agreed to was basically within the parameters of the tight end market, which at the time, I think, was maxed out at about $9 million a year for Rob Gronkowski. And he went to 10. And no tight end who's been effective, you know, Kelsey's been effective, Ertz has been effective, none of them have really been able to get into that $15 million a year category. And it's kind of odd that the running backs, the top running backs in the league, have gotten pushed into that top wide receiver category because they offer you a quote-unquote dual threat. None of the teams have been successful. In general, the players have not been successful. So it's almost like it's a proven failed strategy, but hey, it still exists. Now the question is, what impact does this have on the market? And it boils down to a game of chicken. All right, that's what this has. This is not going to make people. This is not going to be Gurley. The Gurley made David Johnson, made people say, okay, it's all right for David Johnson because Todd Gurley got a big deal. You know, it's not Le'Veon Bell. It was like, eh, well, you know, Todd Gurley got a big deal. It's okay for Le'Veon Bell to get a big deal. It's okay for Ezekiel Elliott to get a big deal because Todd Gurley got a big deal. All of these, in my mind, are pretty much a game of chicken. And the question is, what would these players get if they went on the open market? And the best example that you can look at for that is the Chargers. What happened with the Chargers? The Chargers had Melvin Gordon under contract. Gordon, good player, not to the level of this, not close. But Gordon, because of his status and everything else, he was looking to get paid basically in that range of David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. He was looking for the $13.5 million a season. That was his target. The rumor mill was that the Chargers offered him around 10. And he held out and he held out and he held out and he held out. And finally he came back, excuse me, when he realized that things were not going to go his way. What happened was this year he went into free agency and it was pretty much a dud. $8 million a season, two-year deal. Granted, it's almost all guaranteed, but he was probably hoping for a guarantee in the ballpark of $30 million a year. If we look at David Johnson, it was at 32. Bell is at 35. And they were both around 24. They're 25 and 27, fully guaranteed at signing. So Gordon ends up with 13.5. So that is half of the full guarantee that these other players got. So it's way less. And what happened there was he played the game of chicken. Chargers didn't blink. He went into free agency. What did he find out? Free agency doesn't exist for running backs. So now you move into who's going to be available in the next couple of years, or really in the next year. Let's take a look at our free agents here. And we've got running backs. Let's see who we have up here. I'll just sort them by snaps from last season. Option years. All right. So Fournette. Probably not a lot of high upside with Fournette, but Fournette carries the ball a lot. He was a more efficient receiver this year. Should anyone look at this and should the Jaguars go, wow, you know, Christian McCaffrey got 16. We need to pay Fournette close to that. No, absolutely not. Again, it's going to be a game of chicken. It's going to be that they're going to offer him whatever they think is a reasonable offer or whatever they think the market should be. And that's probably more of where you kind of come to a compromise. In my mind, if I'm running a team, what am I looking at? I'm looking at Gordon. That's the deal that I'm looking at in front of me. I'm looking at $8 million a season over 2 years. And that tells me that that's the market. Then the other numbers, those tell me that those are the aspirational numbers. All right. $16 million is aspirational. $15 million aspirational. $13 million aspirational. The only running back to go into free agency and get close to it, or to get it, was Bell. And that was just a bad job by the Jets, who knows what they were doing. Just wasn't a good job by them. So I think when you look at these teams, that's your thing. Do you want to be aspirational? Do you believe that your player is so good that he is going to go into free agency and he's going to break the market? Or should you just present him a fair offer and spell it out and give them a, you know, leave it or take it or leave it kind of thing? What's the best way that you could probably find value on your players? I would float it out there. What's a trade value for a guy? You know, what would be a trade value for Christian McCaffrey? If you shop Christian McCaffrey around the NFL, would you get a first-round pick for Christian McCaffrey? If the answer is no, he's not worth $16 million a year. Would you get a second-round pick for Christian McCaffrey? Probably. So, what's that? 13? Okay. $3 million? Would you get a third-round pick? That's probably where someone like maybe a Gordon would be, you know, $8 million. And I think you can kind of gauge from that. You could probably gauge what a market is going to be if you kind of floated that out there, what those scenarios would look like. So in Fournette's case, I see much more Gordon in Fournette than I do McCaffrey. Jaguars are kind of a pain, I think, to deal with anyway. So that one will probably go in that route. But, you know, if they do make Fournette a fair offer, then it probably becomes more on Fournette's side to say, well, you know what? All right, I'm aspiring to be the highest paid or be close to it. You know, I want to be $13, $14 million a year. That's fair based on what the Panthers did. It's fair based on what the Cowboys did. And if the Jaguars aren't giving that, you know, if they're not making that offer, well, the next question you have to ask yourself is, what is their offer compared to what the market is probably going to be next year? And if it's anything over eight, well, you should take it. That's, you know, just my opinion on it. We have Chris Carson. You know, this has no bearing on him. Aaron Jones, I don't think it'll have a bearing on him. Dalvin Cook, now that's an interesting one, because Cook brings to the ballpark a lot of the same positives, I think, that you would see with McCaffrey. So what do we have in Dalvin Cook here? Let's just see. So Dalvin Cook, we've got a second-round draft pick. Last year, he had 1,135 yards, 13 touchdowns, 250 carries, 53 receptions, 519 yards. Is he as productive as McCaffrey? No. Is he as productive as David Johnson? He's probably close to that. A little bit under where David Johnson was a couple of years ago, based on what they gave him that deal for. So, again, aspirational, he's probably looking at 13, 14, maybe 15. Realistic? Oh, gosh. I don't know what another team would pay. I think they'd pay more than Melvin Gordon. I don't know if they'd go to 10. Derrick Henry, franchise tag player for the Titans. He does not bring you much in the passing game. He's basically big play running back. More of a throwback, I would say, style of player. Henry is going to make about 10.3 this year. I don't see the market for him being $16 million. So why would you extend somebody at $16 million just because the Panthers did it? I just don't see that. Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara. Now, he's another really interesting one. Why? Plays on a high-powered offense. He's a big name because of the fantasy output, more so a couple of years ago than he has been. Let me just pull up, again, his numbers here. I kind of feel as if his star has diminished in the last season or two. You know, he kind of exploded as a rookie, in limited action. And then I feel like it's kind of declined a bit. So what do we have as a rookie? We had 120 rushes, 728 yards, 8 touchdowns, 100 targets, 81 receptions, 826 yards, and 5 touchdowns. That's the season that got him noticed. This is the season that has everybody going crazy for him. Granted, he's been Pro Bowl, I think, pretty much every year. But let's see, second year after that, 883 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns. Steady on the target, 709 yards. You know, his numbers went back down to kind of normal there. And then last year was a bit of a dud. He was banged up a bit more. Carries went down to about 170. You saw the backup at times being effective. 97 targets last year, only 533 yards. So he was down to 6.6 on the receptions, only one receiving touchdown. You know, his touchdowns were way down, which impacted him fantasy-wise significantly from where he was at before. So I'm sure he looks at this, though, from all the publicity, all the attention that's given, and you say to yourself, I should definitely be paid similar to McCaffrey. I'm agreeing to not be paid as high as McCaffrey, but I'll be close to Elliott. You know, I'll take a 58 over 4. Albert Breer just said well over half of McCaffrey's $64 million is guaranteed. We can get into the numbers on that in just 1 second. And then the last thing, there is he's going to look for that. And I don't think Kamara would settle for less than 13. I don't know if he'd be worth that as a free agent. I don't think he would be. And so it makes for real interesting decisions. And I think the teams that probably should be teams that could be signing some of these running backs, if you have nobody else on your team, if you don't have a quarterback, if you have a rookie quarterback, if you're a team that was in the financial position of the New York Jets last season where you had a buttload of cap space, and you had a rookie quarterback under contract, and you were just looking to blow some money, okay, fine. You go ahead and you do that. For anyone else, it's kind of cap suicide because you're just tying up a bunch of money in a position that's probably not going to help you as much as other positions. So in terms of how we would look at a breakdown on this as the numbers trickle in, so why, when they said well over half, 32 million is guaranteed. So those would be reasonable numbers to expect, because pretty much that's just how these deals work out. So Bell got 35 guaranteed. David Johnson had 32. Elliott had 50. His is obviously a much bigger contract because it runs for 6 years versus 4 years. What did Gurley have? I don't have Gurley in my active player list, so I got to look him up a different way. Gurley had 45 guaranteed. And again, a lot of this is because of that rookie year that's played in. The rookie seasons that are in there. So if you look at effective guarantees, Elliott's effective guarantee, where is that? Do I have that open? I don't. Basically you could probably take about 13, 14 million off of his actual guarantee to bring that number into perspective. And you would do the same here. If we're looking at a 34, the functional, the new guarantee on it, would probably be closer to $20 million, 21, 22, which is a lot. Those are kind of the things that you want to surpass. Your benchmarks that you're looking to beat on, basically both Elliott and Gurley made about $15 million in new money over the existing years of their old contract. So you would be looking for him to be making, 2.8 plus 9 plus another, let's say he wants to get up to 16, 28 million or so over the next 2 years is probably what your benchmark would be. So new money wise, we'll call that 16 million. His 2 year new money that he'd probably be looking for is going to be close to 30 million. Let me bring up Elliott's just to make sure I got the right stuff here. I had them open, and then I dropped off from it. So let me go to my player comparison tool here. Let's look up Elliott. I think I need to add some historical ones into this in some way, shape, or form. Okay, so Elliott by year one had made $25 million in new money. Gurley was at 28. So he's going to be looking for $30 million in new money. Yeah, by that point in time. So if we did a 16... that would be 14. Gurley was at 37. Elliott was at 38, I think. Now I have too many tabs open. Sorry, everyone. I didn't plan on this one as much. 37.1 by year two for Elliott. And Gurley was at 37. So let's say he gets to 38. So that's an $8 million salary in that year. Year three, Gurley was at 47. Elliott is at 48, so let's call it 49. Gets another 11, I think. And then we've got them at 57, 57, and then he's going to get to 64. So if they're smart with the way that they broke this down, assuming they hit new benchmarks at every single season, and maybe they didn't. Let's see how that would be. And let's just make sure I got these right. So that'd be $16 million in new money through the first new year. So that would be 2022. Then you'd be looking, I think, at a $14 million salary to hit $30 million in new money by 2023. You'd be looking at $8 million in new money. That gets you to 38. That's 2024. By 2025, You know what? I think I have the years wrong on this. It's 2024. We'd be looking at 49 million through 2024, and 2025, which should be the last year of the extension, would be a $15 million salary, and that gets you to 64. So what I did there was I made sure that we kind of rode the benchmarks through the first three seasons of these other deals, you know, which were at 47 million and 48 million. So we want the 3 year new money to be at that kind of around those benchmarks. So that's 49. And then we did the major jump in year four. Why? Because our year four, I would just put a red line through it and say no chance of being earned. You know, the chance of earning that is very, very limited. So, you know, that's the way that I would look at probably the way the structure is going to break down. Now, if you throw in the existing money he has in the deal, so let's say it was 2.8 this year, and it's 9 million next year, you know, you'd be looking at, let's say they threw the total amount of new money that's going to be in there. Both those players, I think for Elliott as well, Gurley did not get, he got all his new money, all his added money came in the first season of his new deal. Was Elliott's the same? No, Elliott's was different. Elliott did not get a big bump in cash in his first year under contract. He got it more in the second year. But, you know, let's say they, however they structured this here, you could do, in theory, a $16 million signing bonus. Prorate that over five. You'd have his existing proration for next year, for this year, which is not much. And then we plug in our new numbers here. 14, 8, 11, and 15. Let's add those all up. And let's see how that would work out from a cap perspective if they did it this way. Looking at it, I probably would not do it this way. Just really quick. This is just playing around with numbers here. So he has about 2.7 in proration this year, 2.669782. So that would work out. They don't have a lot of cap room this year, so they probably don't have the luxury of increasing his cap number by too much. His cap number is at 5.5. So if you threw a $16 million signing bonus in here to be about 8.67. So what I did here is I threw in a $16 million signing bonus. I added into that his current salary, which was, I think, 2.8, 2.816088. I have a placeholder of 9 million for his one for next year, then the 14, then 8, then 11, then 15. And let's just make sure that that all works out. That is a total cash of 78.5. Back out his this one, this one, this one. And that works out to 64 million. And it wasn't 78.5, it was 76.5. I had the old proration in there. So if you did it this way, that would work out to 8.7 million cap hit this year, 12.2, 17.2, 11.2, 14.2, 15. That 17.2 is probably too high. So I probably wouldn't go with the full $16 million signing bonus. They may. Let's call it a, what would happen if you did, if we're going to hit these numbers, let's say a $12 million signing bonus. And then we're going to have to increase this salary to 13. Whoops. Let me just make sure again I have this right. Not sure if I do. Hold on. Yeah. Okay. So now this is right. So it's so in this iteration of it, we work out at, as we run on the fly here. So we have a cap hit of about 7, 8, 9 this year, 15-4, 16-4, 10-4, 13-4, 15. Our cost to cut, I would assume the first 3 years of the deal are guaranteed. We want to get that second year in. So that would only leave us a 2-4 cost to cut. You know, you can go the full 16. You can go the 16 million and you just deal with the 1 year on the cap hit. And I think maybe I would do that. You know, you'd be looking probably, you know, because those guarantees, see, because those couple of seasons are going to be guaranteed in there. So let's assume we've got the old guarantee. We'll say that this $14 million salary in 2022 is guaranteed, and the $16 million, you know, that's $42 million bucks right there. I can't imagine that his injury guarantee is going to be more than that, and that'll vest in. So let's just assume that they guaranteed all those seasons. That basically only gives us one awful year to deal with a cap hit. Third season, 17-2, and at that point, you're either going to have a rookie quarterback or you're probably going to extend Teddy Bridgewater, and you're going to have probably a reasonable cap number, even though his actual contract value is so much higher. Then what we've got is, with the $11.2 million cap hit in the second new year, so 2023, we probably have a reasonable enough number cap-wise to where we can walk away 6-4 dead. We have a reasonable enough cap number to say, you know what, maybe we want to keep him for the year at 11-2, and we probably also have enough wiggle room since his salary is $8 million for the year, you know, to say, you know what, how about we bring it down to 5, you know, if things aren't going productively enough. If he's doing great, that's awesome. You know, and then the next 2 years, there's no cap cost in the final year to move away. There's $3.2 million to move away in the year before that. So I think if they'll probably structure it something like that, I think that would probably be the smart way to do it. You know, and I'm going to guess that some teams, in terms of cap, may be a little concerned too about next season. So with all the uncertainty because of the coronavirus, you know, if for some reason the NFL did not play next year or had a shortened season, the salary cap would probably be greatly impacted, because it's not like they can magically make up a year of lost revenue. I don't know how much they'd get paid on their TV contracts. Let's say that those are ironclad and you get paid fully on the TV contracts. Well, you've still lost out on all local revenues pretty much, because you don't have fans in the stadium, so you're not getting any attendance. Your secondary measures that come through your digital arm are probably significantly weakened, because you don't have much that you can put out there. You know, you're not going to have as much. And I would guess that the networks probably don't end up paying the full amount. I would think that there's probably a lesser that's going to happen there. But either way, you'd get hurt pretty significantly. You know, if you just took the local part out of it, revenues would go down. So I think there could be some logic in saying, you know what, to be more on the more cautious side, we probably should look at 2021 as a season where maybe we want to be a little bit more under the cap than normally we would be. And then things should definitely return back to normal with the 2022 cap. Now, I'm not saying you're going to lose the 2021 season, but remember, our cap is based on basically on what you made the year before. You know, what the projections are going to be for everything moving forward. So if in 2020 you don't have really anything coming in, you're going to have a big adjustment to 2021 based on that. So there might be some logic in that. So, yeah, it's a risky move by Carolina. I don't get it, other than the fact that you're doing a solid by a player. You know, will he be the guy to buck the trend? Maybe he will be. Still not going to be worth $16 million a year. You'd be better off going and getting a receiver for $16 a year. But we'll see. We'll know as things go forward. We'll know if by November or December people are, you know, cursing. Why did the Carolina Panthers, as they're sitting there, 6-10, 7-9, and there's talk about his back bothering him or his knees are bothering him or something. That'll be a big hit. If that happens, and if he plays well, there'll be a lot of "I told you so, I told you so, I told you so." So, I guess that's how that'll be. When it comes to running backs, and this is just the one thing that I'll talk about real quick on the CBA, and I think it was the biggest miss by the players. You're not going to get the NFL to budge on revenue, so I think that was fine that there wasn't more of a split. I just didn't think that there was enough give back to the players in terms of financial. Owners are never going to change that revenue split. They're just going to hate seeing any type of 50-50, so it probably isn't even worth it to go after that. I've talked about that before. What you want to do is you want to put mechanisms in place that kind of force them to spend more. And one of the ways to do that is to eliminate the cheap labor that exists in the NFL. And this is really true with running backs. Where we look at Christian McCaffrey and we say after two seasons, if McCaffrey was a free agent after 2 years, and this holds true for all players, I'm not saying you just have a special class for running backs. If McCaffrey was free after 2 years to negotiate whatever contract that there is, there would be interest in him around the NFL. Why? Because he only would have 2 years of wear and tear in his body. So you'd be getting into, say, a four-year deal. That would carry him basically through what now is his second free agent season. So teams would be okay with that. I'm not saying they'd be okay with $16 million a year, but they'd certainly be okay with 10. They'd be okay with 11. But instead, he's making 4. And that holds for every position in the league. It holds for every player in the league, even lower level guys. There is value in certain players. Let's say you have a defensive end who's playing for, let's say he's a third round pick. So let's say his contract averages around $1 million a season. And he's starting 13, 14 games a year and plays 40% of the time, something like that. On the open market, that's probably worth $3 million a season. Doesn't mean that the player is a great player. Just means his participation level that's there is probably worth at least $3 million a season, just based on that. Let's even say the starts are lower than that. Starts are whatever. Look at the playing time. He's probably worth in that ballpark. So the teams are deriving basically $2 million a year in savings on those players when they could be in a position where they'd be forced to pay market value. Those same players, 4 years into the league, maybe they haven't grown at all since then. And if anything, maybe they've regressed a little bit as they've gotten older. They're a little bit more banged up. Then the players hit free agency at that point in time, and they're probably worth 1.5, 1.5 or 2. That's after they've lost two prime earning years that are in there. So mechanisms to force the owners to spend more is to put more players in the player pool who have the ability to earn money. And right now they don't have it because you lock in every player to basically a four-year contract. Undrafted's for 3 years plus a restricted year. So basically everybody is locked into a four-year deal, except for first rounders who are locked into a 5-year deal, and they're expected to be the best players. And occasionally you do get best players out of those later rounds in the draft or occasionally in the undrafted pool. Well, you still control those players' rights for at least 5 years through the first franchise tag, because it's 3 years in the RFA tag, and then you franchise them if it's a UDFA. And if it's a regular free agent or a regular draft pick, it's the 4-year rookie contract plus 1 year of franchise tag. And technically you can still do that second franchise tag. It just gets a little bit more expensive and it's really not worth it at that point. Here, just like with the other players, what's the right way to do it for the Carolina Panthers? it's to go that route. It's to just play things out like the Titans are doing with Henry and just use the franchise tag and then see where things are and then use the franchise tag again if need be. Because it's cheap at the position. But that's just a problem with the system. And that is where the Players Association really should have been focusing, is to the more players that you bring to the pool of money earners, the more money is going to be spent by the league, regardless of what the revenue splits say. So I think that was just a major loss in the CBA. And it's one of the reasons, for positions or for many players, but especially at this position, you know, it really stinks for those other players that I mentioned where you're kind of, game of chicken. Your career there, you don't have the ability to play the game of chicken like a wide receiver who can go and maybe take that 1 year kind of prove it contract. And, instead of signing at 26, he's 27, gets another crack at free agency. Hey, no teams are worried about a wide receiver, 27, 28, 29, probably even 30. Limited worries about that, less worries. Running back, not so good. You can't do a 1 year, 2 year and expect to get another deal. You just can't. Quarterbacks, quarterback's a long game. Quarterback can look for 3, maybe even 4 contracts. There's other positions where you can do a 2 year and you can still get a 3 year after that. Linebackers, for example. Certain edge rushers could probably do that. And again, we're talking more situational kind of guys that are probably doing that, not your superstars. But those positions can do that. Running backs can't do it at all. But if they had brought everybody into the player pool early, you would see salaries across the board rise, in my opinion, regardless of that. So that was just a quick thing. So anyway, we'll see how the numbers turn out when we get them. So next time I jump on, I'll choose one of those teams. If there's anyone else that you want to email me about, Jason at overthecap.com, or just on Twitter, Jason_OTC. Just let me know, and we'll put something together later this week. All right, have a good one, everyone.